tens of millions of Americans are expected to tune in tonight for the final debate between Democratic presidential nominee Senator John Kerry and the incumbent President George W. Bush. The 90-minute event takes place at Arizona State University. It's to focus on domestic issues, and it comes just 20 days after before an increasingly bitter race that is increasingly too close to call. Joining us to talk about it now is NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Thanks, as always, for being with us here in Studio 3A.
Hello, Neil.
So what should we expect to hear tonight? This is to focus on domestic issues.
Right. Well, I think you're going to hear, like we have in the earlier debates, we'll hear a lot of canned answers. We're going to hear George Bush say over and over again that John Kerry is the most liberal senator, that he's a flip-flopper. We'll hear John Kerry say that, you know, Bush has presided over the most loss of jobs since Herbert Hoover 74 years ago, blah, 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 that the tax cuts favor the rich. But I think these are a lot of these issues that have come up tonight ostensibly favors Senator Kerry, and that is the environment, education, health care, things like that. President Bush has to turn the conversation back to his strengths, which would be tax cuts. Polls show that voters trust him much more on taxes than they do John Kerry. And also the homeland security and domestic surveillance, things like that. That is President Bush's strong suit. Again, under the auspices of a domestic agenda.
How big a deal is this? Is this third debate likely to get as big an audience as that first debate, which got tremendous numbers?
Well, obviously, if you look at the history of debates, every succeeding debate gets fewer and fewer viewers and listeners. Of course, you also have that competition. The Yankees play that other team tonight, and so there'll be competition for that too.
So you're going to be watching between innings?
I will be watching the debate. I believe watching it on NPR. But after the game, of course, we'll talk about that later. But more importantly, it's the last time, really, that the American public and the voters and whatever undecided voters there are out there will focus on the two candidates.
Mm-hmm. So there's a great deal at stake. There was a surge for President Bush after the Republican convention. He seemed to have forged a substantial lead that was eroded after the first debate, according to the polls. Of Mr. Kerry, if he's still behind, is not very far behind.
Right. They keep saying that these debates don't matter much, but they certainly do, because John Kerry's comeback, if there is such a thing as a comeback, it happened at the beginning of the debate, the first debate 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. And again, in terms of format, this will resemble the first debate where the candidates stand behind lecterns. There is an audience, but they will not participate. There will only be questions from a moderator, not from the audience.
Right, and that's true. And, you know, everybody said that, well, these will not be really debates. They're scripted. There's no interaction. But as we've seen in every debate so far, we've learned a lot about John Kerry and President Bush that we would not have seen had it not been for these debates.
And again, during that first debate, I guess people thought that they weren't supposed to be cutting away to reaction shots of the one candidate listening to the other candidate. We did see a lot of reaction shots, and that apparently caused a lot of response from viewers. Is that going to be the case this time around as well?
Well, that was an agreement only signed by the Bush and Kerry camps. The networks never signed off on that. They never said they would not get the reaction. So that famous shot of the first President Bush looking at his watch, I think that's one of the reasons the Bush camp this time did not want that in to happen. But again, the faces that George Bush made in debate number one, that perhaps started the part of the understanding that his campaign and his numbers have eroded.
Yeah, the looking at the watch and I guess Al Gore's famous sigh, those two things argued for that. Well, Ken Rudin, and coverage of the third and final presidential debate on National Public Radio on most of these stations later today. Stay tuned for that. And you're listening right now to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Like most journalists, Ken Rudin will be focusing on the candidates' answers tonight. Christopher Scanlon is also going to be listening to the questions. He teaches journalism at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida. Earlier this week, he wrote a column for the op-ed page of the New York Times. He's with us now by phone from his office. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation again.
Thank you, Neil.
Your op-ed described two kinds of questions we hear in debates. Tell us about that and give us a couple of examples.
Okay, the two types are open-ended and closed-ended. If questions are the traffic signals that direct an interview, open-ended questions are green lights and closed-ended ones are reds. An example of an open-ended question, actually the people who were asking the questions at the second presidential debate, the ordinary citizens, I thought did a better job than the journalists because they were asking mostly open-ended questions.
Give me a for instance of an open-ended question.
I will. And that would be from Daniel Farley of Missouri, who asked, Mr. President, since we continue to police the world, how do you intend to maintain our military presence without reinstituting a draft?
As opposed to a closed question, which would be?
Well, a closed question would be one of the ones that Charles Gibson asked, and that was one that you answer yes, no, or I don't know. Would you be favoring capping awards on pain and suffering? Would you limit attorneys' fees? Both of those are closed-ended questions.
So are the intents of these different kinds of questions different? Are you trying to, are journalists, for example, trying to get somebody on the record on a certain point?
Well, in some cases, a closed-ended question is very important because it requires an unequivocal answer, which is the way that James Varner, another one of those undecided Missourians, got Senator Kerry to stare into the camera and say, no, I will not raise taxes on families earning less than $200,000 a year. And so there are times where you want a yes, no answer, a very unequivocal one.
And if you were writing the questions, would they be more open or more closed?
I would try to follow what the ordinary citizens did the other night, and that is I would have more open-ended questions. They, of the 22 questions posed by those Missourians, 17 of the 22 were open-ended. When you looked at the questions posed by Jim Lehrer and Gwen Ifill, who I think are excellent journalists, they divided them almost equally between open-ended and closed-ended.
And we'll get analysis of what the answers and the questions were tomorrow on this program when we rehash not only last night's debate, but the all three debates that the presidential candidates have held so far. But Ken Rudin, let's bring you back into the conversation. If you had the question tonight, what would you ask, Ken?
Well, I could give you an open-ended and a closed-ended question. The open-ended question would basically be, and a lot of people have asked me this too, the effect of illegal immigration on things like national security and welfare rolls and the state of the economy. We talk about the poverty rate. Well, what about how is immigration affecting that? So basically they could talk about what they would do about immigration. And I think the closed-ended question would really be, I mean, basically, would you pitch Mariano Rivera for two innings tonight? Because I'm very nervous about this game.
Christopher Scanlon, if you had a question available to you tonight, what would that be?
Would want to ask him the question that Linda Grable asked at the end of the debate the other night. Please give me three instances in which you came to realize you had made a wrong decision and what you did to correct it, because he failed to answer that the other night. I'd really like to get an answer to it.
You know, George Bush was asked that question in the 2000 debate, and he was very clever. The worst mistake he ever made was trading Sammy Sosa. Got a great answer. I was very surprised that he did not have a response to that question this time.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't own a team anymore.
Well, he didn't own it then either. But Christopher Scanlon, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Christopher Scanlon teaches journalism at the Poynter Institute, and he joined us from his office in St. Petersburg, Florida. Always good to have you, Ken.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and the author of the Political Junkie column, which you can read. I think you had a new one out yesterday, right?
That's correct.
A new one out yesterday. It's on npr.org. Also, one final item. Next Tuesday, we begin a series of programs on key issues this election year with representatives from the Bush and Kerry campaigns here to answer your questions. First up is health care. We want to make sure we hear from as many of you as possible. So if you're a doctor, a nurse, a patient, a business that provides health care insurance, an insurer, or one of the uninsured, if you're anyone with a direct stake in this issue, email questions about health care to totn@npr.org. Make sure you put health care in the subject line. We'll look at your letters. Call some of you back next week and use some of your email questions again. Also, that address one more time, totn@npr.org. Put healthcare in the subject line. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.